This podcast is brought to you by Sky Arts, proud broadcast sponsor of the Guardian Hay Festival, bringing you the book show at Hay every day at 7 p.m. on Sky Arts One HD with me, Mariella Frostrup. For details, visit sky.com/arts.
I'm Jon Snow, and you're listening to The Guardian's Haycast.
There is another legendary story in Brussels of a German chairman who... The meeting was going on and on and on and on. And so finally, he decided to call a halt to the meeting. And the expression that he used, in this case, it wasn't a translation. It was him talking directly in English. He said, "And now, ladies and gentlemen, I suggest we go to bed and up with the cock."
I think that that's an extremely appropriate moment to draw the proceedings to close. But this is... yet another of those hey moments. Thank you very much.
Come and try your bike here. Here at the Hay Festival, exclusive to the Hay Festival. Come and try your bike here.
Hi. What am I going to ride?
Right, well, we've got some bikes over here, actually, right. that we've got ready to use.
Right. I'm Jon Snow. I'm up here in Hay on Wye at the festival, chairing a couple of events. I've got a pause in proceedings, so I just said this is the moment. Road test, something that's been in the headlines for the last few years. It's the cycle hire scheme that Boris has been banging on for about the last year, and which is going to hit the streets of London at the end of July. Now, I'm a keen cyclist, I admit, and although these cobbled streets of Hay are not quite the same as my regular commute to and from Channel 4, I'm still rather excited about giving it a go.
What about lock? Is there a lock?
No, I mean, the point is you're going to use them for short journeys so you can go from point to point and lock them at the docking station that you finish your journey at.
What happens if you want to stop somewhere before the docking station?
Well, there's plenty of docking stations. You're never going to be that far away from one.
OK, shall we have a go? Oh, yeah, pretty good.
Well, very, very nice ride, I must admit. I know, the old Bill are going to be after me. We're crossing an extremely dangerous high road here in Hay. Well, I'm now going to do a sort of proper review of this thing. It's actually an extremely comfortable ride. Although it does look heavy and is heavy, to cycle around on it's pretty good. Mind you, it's in apple pie order. I'm wondering how this one will stand up. It looks very rugged. Right, now we're coming into proper... urban Hay. Hay is a hilly place and therefore you might think a little challenging on a bicycle, but on these, Hay on Wye is a doddle. Hay Cinema Bookshop, 200,000 books. This is the way to see Hay. I think we'll go down the relatively pedestrianised area. Would you like to have a look at this? This is the new London... free bike.
You've cycled all the way.
I didn't cycle from
Very
London,
impressive.
No. Oh, look at this. This is something. Now, let me tell you that I'm seeing something from the top of this bicycle that nobody's standing around here. This is a man on a one-wheeled cycle. Pretty good. He's catching onions. Now, that's something I could not do on this free London bicycle. Terrific! Well done! Now, I've absolutely come to the epicentre of Hay on Wye, and this is Richard Booth's bookshop. Books bought anywhere in the world, and it's massive. Hay is an amazingly honest place, so I'm going to leave the bike outside this Booth's bookshop. We're going to run in and check out a couple of books, hook them onto the rack at the front of the bike, and while I'm doing that, let's hear from the book team back on site.
I'm Claire Armistead, and I'm sitting here outside the green room at Hay with Ian McEwan, who's just won the PG Woodhouse Prize for his novel Solar. Ian, what does this feel like to you, and what does it mean?
Well, it means I get presented with a pig and a set of Everyman Woodhouse and some champagne. So it really means a lot.
This is a bit of a departure for you, isn't it, a comic novel? Do you think of it as a comic novel?
I like to think there was always some dark humour or humour in what I've done, but probably the first time I've decided to have a number of set pieces in a novel that isn't entirely comic because it's about climate change. It's quite difficult to entice a reader into a novel about climate change. The subject is so leaden and laden with statistics and science and dispute and, above all, virtue. So I decided that humour would have to help me through.
And a lot of the humour revolves around Michael Beard, the central character, who is a sort of burnt-out Nobel laureate who did all his research work very early on and now looks at himself in despair in the mirror.
Yes, I mean, he's a fatty who, as you say, he got his Nobel Prize in the mid-80s in physics and hasn't done a stroke of science since. He's coasted on his reputation and is something of a womanizer. He's intensely greedy. He's fundamentally dishonest, especially with himself, but also with his various wives. He's had five so far when the novel opens. He's also something of a comic victim of a number of mistakes he makes through the novels. But along the way, he becomes convinced, having been a skeptic, he becomes convinced for rather self-serving reasons that climate change is real and that he can make his reputation, return to science, make an awful lot of money, acquire patents and redeem the planet. And so it's the story, really, of this steady progress towards total failure.
He has a great line. I think you do something very clever with him, which is to you get him to condemn himself while actually speaking sense. So this terrific line, virtue is too passive, too narrow. We have to welcome into our solutions the ordinary compulsion of self-interest. Now, he is supremely self-interested.
Yes. I do actually give him every now and then thoughts that I have myself, and sometimes thoughts that I have but never dare utter. And it's the case, I think, that we fool ourselves if we think we're going to deal with climate change by going to the bottle bank or getting a smaller car or turning down the thermostat. We've actually got to have an industrial revolution. This is not going to come about by being virtuous. It's very hard to get nations to be virtuous. Individuals can be virtuous, but large groups of people don't act virtuously generally. So what Michael Beard is saying, something that I think I half believe myself, is that this industrial revolution will throw up fabulous opportunities. I think it will bind us together. I mean, it might actually draw us together in the face of a... I mean, no one escapes this, not even the rich, although the poor will take a harder hit, that's for sure.
It struck me that if you take Beard and Perrone from Saturday together, you could say you're developing a project of looking at baby boomers. And we've got a lot of talks at Hay this week about the sort of bankruptcy of the baby boomer generation. Am I reading too much into it?
I'd never thought of it that way, so this isn't any conscious project of mine. But it's bound to happen. I was born in 1948. I always share something with all of my characters in my books. We are the generation that grew up in relative peace, constant expanding opportunities, prosperity. I'm a grammar school boy who had free education, free universities. I was born into the paperback revolution, the rock and roll, all the benefits and amenities, and a relatively empty country. And I mean, in the early 70s and late 60s, if you wanted a job, you could walk in anywhere and just ask to see the boss. So it seems in retrospect. I know it's not really like that, but there was always somewhere to park, as it were. And so now we head into our late 50s, 60s, 70s, and the baby boomers are discovering old age as if no one was ever old before. And there is something laughable about it. So I think we are very good subjects for comedy.
What are you working on now? Is this a project you're going to continue, or will you surprise us with something completely different?
Well, I'm waiting to surprise myself. I'm in that delicious hiatus between one thing and another where I just read and hang around, and I've written a screenplay of On Chesil Beach. I'm hoping that Sam Mendes will direct it. We might even do it this year if his Bond movie truly has collapsed because MGM is bust, or close to bust. We will go into overdrive and hope to shoot it in Dorset and the Chilterns and Oxford this summer. So it's going to be panic stations.
So who are going to play the couple? The big question.
Well, we're still at the stage of fantasising and it's full of wish lists. And the only real name that keeps coming up is Kerry Mulligan. We think, both Sam and I think, she's absolutely delightful. I think she'd bring such sort of warmth and grace to that part of of a young girl, timid, virgin, highly educated, a musician on her wedding night. But, you know, fingers crossed.
Now, it's good that we've come onto film at this point, because one of the new things we're doing this year is to ask people around the festival to come up with their own questions that they'd like to ask. And they've asked two questions of you, and one of which is how you thought the Dunkirk scene in the film of Atonement married up to your imagination of it.
I think that filmically it was astonishing in that it had that five-minute Steadicam continuous shot, and that was really Joe Wright's. It was like the watermark that he put into that film. What I would say I miss from it is the narrative. I mean, when I was writing Atonement, I wasn't thinking of a movie. When I was writing Atonement, I couldn't think of a way into doing Dunkirk. You know, 250,000 men on a beach. I mean, how does a novel deal with that? And I was hiking in Spain, in Andalusia, and I suddenly thought, I'm doing it. This is what it is. It's a hike. I just have to give him a couple of mates and let them hike for 3 days and then reach the beach and die there. The trouble is that when you make a movie of a novel, you have to drop a great deal. I mean, Atonement is probably, I don't know, about 130,000 words long. A screenplay is 16,000 words. You know, it's a painful process of dropping, and we had to find other ways through this. So I admire what Joe did there, but at the same time, I regret losing that narrative thread.
And the final question is, do you like dancing?
I have to have my consciousness altered, and then I do a certain amount of wine. The last time I danced was on my 60th birthday, and I hired a huge space, lots of friends, and a very good blues rock band, Ian Siegel, who are an amazing band. I mean, he's a superb guitarist. And for the first time in 3 or 4 years, I suddenly found I could not resist. I'm completely an expert, and I'd hate to see ever a video of myself wafting about.
Once a baby boomer, always a baby boomer.
Exactly, sir.
Ian, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I'm James Lovelock, an elderly scientist. Guilty reading pleasures. At night, I just like to read trashy literature in bed because it helps you go to sleep. And so thrillers, they vary. You go through phases of you fall in love with some author, and then after a while you realise you're not as good as you thought he was. And at the moment, I'm into Lee Child. Another one that really moved me, in fact, it's driven me away from Lee Child almost, is Cormac McCarthy. But I wouldn't feel guilty about that. I mean, I think it's wonderful stuff.
Well, the bank holiday weekend is always the busiest time of the festival. There's something like 127 events on the Saturday and Sunday of the weekend alone. And Claire, what's been the big news, do you think, so far?
The thing that's been the big excitement for me today was hearing the Nobel laureate Nadine Gordimer talking to festival director Peter Florence in front of a packed audience about her novel The Conservationist.
Yep, I heard that too. She really is one of the greats, and it was such a pleasure to hear her talk.
The connections between life and what one makes of it are quite mysterious and very often misunderstood. Sometimes journalists say to you, was this character based on so-and-so or that? But Graham Greene once said to me, the only time that I ever had the privilege of talking to him, that people don't understand. Nothing can be a book, a character which is A or B or C. What happens to us, because you never know anybody completely. You can live with somebody for years. You know one side of them. And the person who knows them in their professional capacity knows another side. There's no such thing as knowing anybody completely. We like to think we do, but it doesn't happen. And he put it, I thought, most beautifully. He said, you sit in a bus, or you might be in a crowd like this, and you notice someone next to you. You look at their body language. You notice whether they turn and whisper to somebody. You get an idea of them, and it fascinates you, and you invent an alternative life for them. And I think this is a wonderful way of explaining how fiction works and how it can relate so remotely to a real being.
It's strange how often big stories break while we're down here in Hay. This weekend, of course, Lib Dem MP and Treasury Chief David Laws was rumbled claiming expenses he wasn't due, £40,000 in total. £40,000, Sarah? What could we do with £40,000?
Buy a few tickets to some events, I think.
And Nick Clegg will certainly be answering questions about that later in the week when he's down here.
Meanwhile, Heather Brook, who's the woman who broke the expenses scandal in the first place, is down here for this weekend, and she gave us her reaction.
It's amazing how the story just keeps on rolling. And my reaction is that, is it really up to the Daily Telegraph to be the watchdog of MPs? Because presumably they are the only ones to have the raw information, and that's why they're able to find out about this misuse of funds. It's always been my view that this was public information and we should have a right to see it all in its unadulterated form. You know, we shouldn't have to get blacked out documents. And this is why we need those raw documents. So until we get them, we're going to see these little scandals cropping up over time. So it would just be better, I think, for Parliament, if they want to clean slate, they should just publish the lot regularly and not wait such big time gaps between publication.
And Howard Davis, director of the London School of Economics and ex-chairman of the Financial Services Authority, also had something to say about it.
As you can see from this, the UK is in its own difficulty in terms of its own borrowing. And that is even though, of course, we now have in charge a new Chief Secretary to the Treasury of unimpeachable integrity. Sorry, I wrote that yesterday afternoon. You know, it's just amazing how quickly things can change.
And from one money matter to another, budgets, the economy and debt, it's a subject that looms large in the 2010 Hay programme as well it might.
But what nobody's actually got round to asking yet is whether the festival tickets themselves are good value.
Well, here I am, sitting on the grass, lovely and relaxed. I'm Tracy Sortwell, I'm at the Hay Festival, and I'm here with my husband. We're here for about 12 days to enjoy the pleasures of the festival, the whole thing, from beginning to end. Whilst the camping's quite cheap, we've actually spent £498 on our tickets. Walking towards the Barclays Wealth Pavilion. They actually sponsor the biggest pavilion here. There's about 1,200 people can get seated in it. And my question is whether or not Barclays Wealth performances or events are actually going to provide me with value for money, and has my wealth been well spent? I have got with me the Hay Festival programme, which is invaluable to anybody at the festival. I've highlighted all the events me and my husband are going to. We're going to see Roddy Dahl tomorrow. Got Robert Winston. Oh, where is it? What's his name here? Ed Byrne. That would be fun. Rob Brydon. Joe Brand. That's going to be funny. We've got a hill farm visit. We're going to a lamb farm, I believe. My husband's going to see Michael Holden whilst I listen to Ian Blair. Virginia McKenna and Richard Adams. Chris Evans, now that's going to be interesting. Now, he's one of the more expensive ones. I wonder whether or not he's actually going to be worth that. To town then. John Simpson.
Thank you.
So really what I am doing here is putting Hay to the test financially. Whether or not I have been to a £4 talk and really would have been willing to spend £10 on it, or I've been to the £10-15 talks and think, actually, I'm just paying for the name. You'd have been better on the screen.
Coming forward, please.
Today we've got 4 hours of entertainment for £18. Two of them are just £5 and two of them are £4. Which is just phenomenal. I was just thinking, you can't get that sort of entertainment in any theatre, certainly not in London. Right, I must dash because I'm off to see Christopher Lloyd on the Guardian stage. See ya.
So, Sarah, how are you going to spend the rest of your day?
Well, I'm going to go and see Bill Bryson talking, and we've got an exclusive interview with him in tomorrow's Haycast, so that'll be a good one to go along to. And then I think what I might do is stay up a bit late tonight, go to one of the 9:45 showings with Ed Miliband, who's talking to our own Ian Katz, and I think that should be really interesting. But what about you?
Well, I'm going to have some lunch now because I haven't actually had time to eat. Unfortunately, there isn't much time to eat at Hay.
But that's true.
It's very good for us in lots of ways. And then I'm going to have my first taste of the Hay Fever Festival, which is the children's strand, which of course really gets up and running during the week. And I'm going to see William Nicholson and ask him to explain about his rather controversial novel. Please do send us the questions you'd like us to put to Hay's biggest hitters. You can do that at guardian.co.uk/hay.
One of the other big excitements of being in this weird wet field in Wales is that you see so many of your heroes wandering around. And
what's your top spot so far, Sarah?
The top spot has definitely been being at the pub last night with a lot of people from The Guardian, including the chief arts correspondent Charlotte Higgins, who should wander into the garden but Jerry Hall. And Charlotte, who was desperate for a cigarette, went and bummed one off her.
Words with Charlotte last night about that. She didn't ask what brand of cigarette Jerry Hall smoked, which
apparently they were very strong
and they were in a dark blue packet, so yes. If anybody knows what they are, please do write in and tell us about it. And is that Jon Snow over there on a bicycle? My goodness, he's really in for a penny, in for a pound.
Well, this is great. I've arrived back. I'm just going to put it back into the pay station. Here we are. Well, we have survived. Now, listen here. I came here to knock the bike and not to praise it, but I failed. It is an extremely nice piece of plumbing.
What about the cost? The tariffs are basically you can get an access fee for a day for a pound, and then for any number of journeys...
That gives you a key or what?
Well, basically that gives you access to the bike, you get a code, or you can become a member for the year mm-hmm. and pay £45 for that, plus £3 for the swap. Now, once you've got the access for the day, journeys of up to half an hour from point to point are free. There's no extra to pay.
Right. I think the proof of the pudding is going to be these parking stations. How many are there going to be?
There's going to be 400 initially in central London.
See, I just wonder whether that's enough, but I suppose, well, practice will tell us. Well, I have to vote it a success. You've got the right machine. Whether you've got the right strategy in terms of where these docking bays are going to be, will only time will tell.
Oh, I think it is. Oh, how lovely. They are wonderful, Gifford servants.